You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, my guest is Barbara Han Clow. Barbara is an internationally acclaimed ceremonial teacher, author, and Mayan calendar researcher. Her numerous books include The Pleiadian Agenda, Alchemy of Nine Dimensions, Catastrophobia, Liquid Light of Sex, and the Mayan Code. She has taught at sacred sites throughout the world and maintains an astrological website with her free astroflash for the new moon at www.handcloud2012.com. So because we want to get into the conversation rather than talking about Barbara, let's welcome her to the show now. Hi, Barbara. How are you?
Hi, Lance. I'm fine. How are you?
Well, I'm good. Before we dive into whatever topics we're guided towards, I just have to tell you and everybody else that the Alchemy of Nine Dimensions is a mind-blowing roadmap and an absolute must as a handbook for awakening.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
You're
very
welcome.
Much. And that's very exciting for me because, as you know, the original information came in 94, 95 in the Pleiadian Agenda, and the original information was channeled. And then since then, my partner and I have been teaching it, and I've also written a book about it called Alchemy of Nine Dimensions. In other words, Alchemy of Nine Dimensions, the one that you like so much, is a scientific analysis of a channeled book. And I think it's probably the first time this ever occurred. But because I've had this 16 years now of teaching this information and researching it, what's really exciting for me is that maybe 10, 15 years ago, most people had no idea what I was talking about. And I think it's a fantastic measure of people's growth that so many people seem to understand this book. The one you have is a new revision that just came out a couple of months ago because, of course, since 2004, there were major scientific issues that came up, and I needed to update it. And the new edition, the revised edition, has already sold more than the original edition did. And this
but
this is a sign that people can understand it. In other words, try to imagine yourself back in 2004 reading this book. You'd
be
pretty puzzled, you know? So people are really waking up.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And, you know, It's so interesting because I have read a lot of books in my lifetime because it's been a lifelong journey, and then so many books for the show. But it was almost as if since Carl Kellerman's Conscious Convergence on the 17th and 18th of July this month, people around me, my closest friends, are having the most incredible transformational experiences unique to them, and they're just tossing. They're just making this jump or leap, which it's like light years into some an amazingly raised awareness. They're waking up from 30 years of alcoholism. Another one has found a higher source or higher power, and he's just doing incredible things. And then I had my own experience, and then when I read your book, it just brought everything into focus and opened so many doors for me.
Especially
really about
great
the
to
dimensions.
Hear that, you know. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, maybe you could talk about the how you arrived at the dimensions and how we can access all nine dimensions and what's been stopping us until now.
Well, the dimensions came, all of the information about the nine dimensions came through in a channeled state. And so once the material was in, it was tape recorded and then it was transcribed for me so I could use it as a book. And once the material was all in, I only understood about maybe 50% of it. In other words, I understood the first five dimensions, but I really didn't understand the sixth dimension through the ninth dimension. So then, as I said to you a moment ago, I started researching it scientifically. because it is very scientific material.
Yes.
It was probably great that it came through me, because although I'm an astrologer and I have a fairly cosmological mindset, I sure didn't understand things like quantum physics and string theory and topology, the different sciences in it, you know, and so it came through in a fairly pure form because I didn't have any idea what I was talking about. And then, for me, this is my only channeled book. Otherwise, I tend to be a left-brain researcher with a pretty strong right-brain sense of direction. Mm. And so once I went out and started teaching it, I can assure you it was really embarrassing to teach this material when I didn't understand it myself. And during the early workshops back in 1995, 1996, 97, a lot of scientists, physicists, and mathematicians were coming to my workshops. And they were really dismayed to realize they had a person who didn't understand what she had written. But they were teaching me. So by 2004, I had a pretty good handle on the science of all of the dimensions except the ninth dimension. And I just decided to go to press because another thing that happened with this material is there's a whole bunch of scientific theories about each dimension, which at the time I brought it in didn't agree with conventional science at all. In fact, in many cases, disagreed with it. And so then from 96 through 2003, proofs for the things that came through in this book started to appear coming through scientists. And, of course, I documented all that. Fortunately, I kept track of it all. So by 2004, I decided it was time to go to press because I just thought this was just so exciting. And then in 2005, I discovered Carl Kalaman's Mayan calendar theory. And then I had the information for the ninth dimension because his material is really the only explanation for the ninth dimension in this book.
Wow.
So it's been a journey. It's been a real learning curve for me. And I must say, at this point, I'm a person who loves science. I can read science books easily. I can't do calculations, of course. But I love science. And so another really neat thing about alchemy of nine dimensions is the sixth dimension is the dimension of a world of sacred geometry that then causes replication in our dimension, which is the third dimension. Because the third dimension in this system is linear space and time. And so during the period that I was understanding the material in this book, we of course were having constant crop circles, especially in England. And the crop circles are really an expression of that six-dimensional realm in this book. And so fortunately, we had something going on in the planet that was awakening people, because millions and millions of people have awakened an understanding of geometry because of the crop circles. And sacred geometry is kind of a hard field to study. Fibonacci, you know, spirals and all that stuff. It's pretty tough stuff. And I know when I first started studying it, once this book came in, I felt like I had a headache all the time. But at this point, millions and millions of people are just flipping out on how geometry creates nature and creates forms in the third dimension. It's really exciting. So this summer's crop circles are really amazing because, speaking of alchemy of nine dimensions, apparently it's really breaking through at a larger level as far as I can tell. And most of the crop circles this summer, at least half of them, are different workings out of nine-dimensional theory.
Wow.
So
well,
I'm having a blast looking at them. You know?
Well, you know, one of the things that blew me away was, I haven't been following the crop circles real closely, but one of them, or several of them, show eight planets, and I was trying to figure out how the seven sisters of the Pleiades could have an eighth. And when you mention in your book that our own sun is part of the Pleiades star system, is that correct, accurate information?
Well, first of all, that's what the Pleiadian said in 95. And one thing I always like to do is I really like to differentiate between something that they've said and then something that I need to verify. So, of course, once they said that, then I went to work on it. And first of all, a fair number of early Greek astronomers between about 500 BC and around 200 AD believed that the Pleiades are that our solar system is part of the Pleiadian system, and that Alcyone Orion is the central star. Mm-hmm, and there are some avant-garde astronomers now who are looking into this. In fact, there's a really wonderful book by a guy named, his name is Cruttenden. I don't remember his first name, but his book is called The Lost Star of Space and Time, and it's a great book. And he believes that our sun is part of a binary system, which extremely likely, because now that we've been able to get out into space with really good telescopes, around 85-90% of the stars have a binary companion. So it's highly unlikely that we're not a binary system. And so Cruttenden is working on the possibility that the twin star to our sun is actually Alcyone, which is just fascinating. So people are looking into this, but of course it's not something that I can analyze scientifically. It would take a really good astronomer to really take this seriously.
Well, one of the things that many New Age people that are taken seriously are making claims that during this shift in consciousness that many people on the planet won't make it to the fifth or the sixth, and some might have to repeat the whole cycle and all that. But according to the information that is in the nine dimensions, it appears that it's not, that's a linear way of thinking about it. We have access to and are in all nine at the same time, and we're just simply not living multidimensionally.
Yeah, it's a matter of whether people are aware. And when you are actually living in nine dimensions of consciousness, you're pretty much in a state of very high level enlightenment. And in the past, people could only sustain states of consciousness like that for very brief periods of time. But at this point, more and more people are beginning to take those kinds of steps with their consciousness. And one of the things that I love about the nine dimensions, the theory from the Pleiadians, is that when you start to really analyze the nature of each dimension, like take the seventh dimension, which is the dimension of sound, and then sound comes into the sixth dimension and creates geometry. And sound creating geometry is something that we all are pretty familiar with. Most of us have seen Matsuro Emoto's book of crystals, and that's an example of actually being able to see that sound creating water. And then some people have seen cymatics machines, which actually show you through a medium how sound creates geometry. So one of the things I like about this system is I just explain something to you that you can understand pretty easily. And then if you have a chance to watch a cymatics machine, which I have, it'll blow your mind. Because I'm telling you, you'll see it. Like for example, you know, imagine you're on the beach and imagine you're looking at a really incredibly complicated shell. And that shell, of course, is demonstrating all the principles of geometry and Fibonacci spirals and all that, because that's how we see it in nature. Yeah. Well, imagine if you could actually hear the sound that creates shell. See, so we're waking up in a really wonderful, mystical way, because we do live on a planet where sound is actually formulating geometry that then creates us. It's just a matter of whether we're in touch with it or not.
Yes, and then it makes it so clear and simple and easy to understand when it's explained what these different dimensions are and how they are basically stepping down through the lower dimensions and what they, how they all fit together. Mm-hmm. One of the things that was astonishing to me, because I've always... heard people say, well, I got tapped in the Akashic records, and this is what I saw, and so on and so forth. And I've had kind of this linear idea that they're out in the clouds somewhere where God is.
Yeah. And they're in the core of the earth.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, it's liberating.
And it's all scientific, too, in terms of detection, because the first dimension that you're alluding to is the iron core crystal in the center of our planet. And when that came in back in 95, science had not verified that yet. That was the first verification in 1996, and that's when I started getting really excited, you know. And so meanwhile, the Pleiadians, first of all, what they said about the center of the Earth turned out to be scientifically verified. So then once that happened, then I figured, well, maybe I could also figure that the rest of the stuff they said was true, even though you couldn't necessarily verify it. So the second level of what they're saying is they're saying that that's the first dimension. The iron core crystal is vibrating because it's vibrating in tune with all of the other centers in the universe, the centers of the other stars and galaxies and planets. Everything has a center, and they all vibrate. And that's what creates the sound in the universe, as a matter of fact. Mm. But back to the first dimension for a minute, it turns out scientifically that the first dimension vibrates at about 60 hertz, which is 60 pulses per second, 40 to 60 pulses per second. Now, it turns out that 40 to 60 hertz is beta frequency in our brain. And when we're on beta frequency, our brains are synchronized, and we basically have access to anything in the universe. And so when we synchronize with that frequency in that core, we can read the Akashic records. And so it's not an airy-fairy idea, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And I just
mm-hmm.
taught at the Edgar Cayce Institute a couple of weeks ago, and, of course, Cayce just had fabulous access to the Akashic records. And
mm-hmm.
so I think something happens for us. This book, I think, creates a grounding for a whole lot of information that was kind of flying around
yes.
in the ethers until now, you know?
Yes, absolutely. And then it made so much sense that coming up through those energies coming up pass through the second dimension, which is the telluric, where it interfaces with the third, and that's kind of an element of, well, isn't that where the elementals and the fairies and the divas and our suppressed shadow resides?
Yeah, and microbes and viruses, all that.
Right, right.
Yeah, right.
And then we have the level of the fourth, which is like the canopy that you show in your book in the various diagrams, which is one of those diagrams is worth the whole book.
I know that one diagram. When Jerry and I teach, sometimes we teach with only one. We just, unlike all these people who do PowerPoint, we just stand
yes.
up there with that one diagram and go to work on it because it's really fabulous.
Oh, it is. That is such a powerful tool.
And, you know, it shows how we receive the dimensions. In other words, the issue would be, okay, all these dimensions are out there, but how do you connect with them? And that's what's great about that illustration.
Yes. Now, the other question that goes along with connecting to them is why we're so disconnected, and what happens, you know, how does that happen that these higher dimensions are mainly inaccessible to most people or have been? What's breaking up that energy, and how does that involve the control paradigms that have been actively attempting to lasso humanity
yeah.
into kind of a vicious cycle?
Well, there's kind of two theories running through this material. One of them has to do with the fact that there was a gigantic cataclysm in our solar system around 11, 12, 13,000 years ago. And that is, of course, described in this book, the story of what actually happened. And then what happened with that cataclysm, there's kind of two ways to look at it. First of all, it basically really screwed us up electromagnetically, and it screwed up our ability to receive higher states of consciousness. And so we began to devolve at that point instead of continue to develop on the line that we were on. Then the other thing that happened when this event occurred on our planet is that some people were stronger than other people, and the whole process of powerful people controlling weak people went into gear. And then once that happened, it built and it built and it built until now we are living on a planet where we have an elite or a world management team that is basically running everything. Very few people are running things on the planet in a way that most people disagree with violently.
Mm-hmm.
And so what the world management team did, if you think about that diagram of the person on the table in the third dimension and then
mm-hmm.
a canopy over their body, the
mm-hmm.
world management team realized early on, 5,000 years ago, if they could cut individuals off from direct access to those higher dimensions, then
yes.
people would not be able to develop and grow and go in the direction that they wanted to go in. So the world management team has very successfully been reducing people to basically what I call call the Oreo cookie. We've been reduced to the second, third, and fourth dimension. And
yep.
It would be like we're in the third dimension in linear space and time, and we're like the white sugar inside the Oreo cookie. And then the second and the fourth dimension are squeezing us in.
Yes.
And the World Management Team managed to do that by creating religions, especially the main Western religions. And the religions are like Christianity and Judaism and Islam. These religions are functioning in the fourth dimension as a control paradigm, and it's keeping people from having the direct access that they're capable of.
Yes, boy, well said. Now, would that relate to how would that relate to the difference between a negative and a positive polarity, and how that's managed to translate as duality versus polarity?
Yeah, that's a really complex issue. And the way we work with that when we're teaching is we use a healing model. So I'll do that in just a moment. But first of all, what happens in the fourth dimension is that things split into positive and negative, dark and light, good and evil. They split into all of those levels or those dualities.
Mm-hmm.
And when I found out about that from the Pleiadians, I had a whole lot of questions about why that was the case. And I finally came to the conclusion that it's just basic science, because when you're in the third dimension, now another interesting thing about this material is the Pleiadians say each dimension has a science. And so what they say is they say Newtonian physics works in the third dimension. It's the science of the third dimension. And then when we get into the fourth dimension, we get into fourth and fifth dimension, we get into quantum realities. And so they're saying that, and as you know in the book, each level of science is identified. But regarding the issue of duality, if we look at the third dimension and we look at Newtonian science, basically electromagnetism is all based on positive and negative energy. So I think it's just a function of the way electromagnetism functions in the third dimension. I think that's why it works that way. But the trick is that for us as humans, and this is where we humans differ from plants and animals, because in many cases I think plants and animals are actually superior to us. And so when I bring these things up, I'm not talking about who's better. You know, like I think cats are very six-dimensional, all that stuff.
Yeah.
But regarding being a human, our task as a human really is to master the fourth dimension and to learn how to experience everything in life as a polarity and not a duality. And what that means is with any given emotional experience that we have or emotional relationship that we have, we need to develop it to such a degree that it's not about dark and light and positive and negative. It's all about being centered and having a very, very wide polarity on an issue. So when we teach that stuff, we use the healing session as an example in workshops, because when you go to a healing session, basically what you're really doing is you're resolving those dualities and preparing yourself to be able to go into higher dimensions.
Now that probably involves, I'm familiar with healing a lot of healers through the show, and that involves a lot of processing and unblocking and letting go.
That's right.
So the basically what the healer is doing is empowering the individual to be free.
Yeah, that's right. And they're also holding space for the person so that the person can do the work. Because I'm glad you talked to healers, so I'll take a minute on this. What a healer is doing is they're slowing the frequency of the person on the table down to the second dimension, because the second dimension is where you have all the elemental information about your health and your emotions. Mm-hmm. But the healer also, even though they don't usually, or I shouldn't say don't, but frequently, see, healers are trained really well, but they often don't really know what's going on as far as
right.
You know,
I found that.
And so the healer, meanwhile, has had a little discussion with the person, and they want to know, like they want some kind of cue, because when you go for a healing session, you've gone for a specific reason. And so the healer, while they get it together with the client, what they're doing is they're tuning into the first dimension, and they're tuning into those Akashic records.
Yeah.
And then finally the healer gains confidence that they understand and can feel what the person really needs. And then they help the person go into whatever the issue is, whatever the block is. And, of course, there's many, many techniques for doing that.
Right.
But once the healer and the client start working on the block itself. Then what happens is that polarity starts to open on the issue, and then people can travel into very, very high dimensions. So that's why the Pleiadians show that diagram as a person on a table.
Yeah, that's so powerful.
I'm
going to be referring to that constantly.
Yeah. Well, when it came through, by the way, the Pleiadians are really difficult to deal with because they're very demanding.
Yeah.
I mean, look at my life, you know. And so, I've had a big job description. And so when that diagram came in, and all of the diagrams, is what the Pleiadians do is they tell me to get out a piece of paper and a pencil. And then they transmit an image onto the page, and all I do is draw it. And then it's up to me after that to figure out what the whole thing means. And so it took me a number of years to figure out why. Because, see, that could also be a person sitting in a chair or a person walking around.
Right.
It could be you can be in any position in the third dimension. But the point is that most of us experience these kinds of levels in healing sessions.
Yes. Now, how does that relate to... I guess what I'm trying to ask is, where does the collective consciousness reside? Is that in a level of the archetypes at the fourth?
Yeah, the collective mind, collective consciousness. The fourth dimension is the location of all of the thoughts and feelings of the human race. And that's why it's important to keep, you know, like your dog when you're sitting in the sun relaxing in the morning isn't worried about the war in Iraq, you know.
But, right.
We're all plugged into this collective, which has negative aspects, which we all know because a lot of people, see, we're supposed to live in 3D. And it's linear space and time, and we're supposed to be here oriented toward the directions and in touch with the second dimension, the first dimension. But a lot of people are out of their bodies and they're floating around in the fourth dimension. And the problem with that is also people who watch television all the time or people who tune into the media all the time. Because if you let your consciousness be in the collective too much of the time, then what starts to happen is you're not really in your body. So that's the negative side of the fourth dimension. But the positive side of the fourth dimension is that we're all plugged into it. Even if you don't watch TV and even if you're an indigenous person living on the Andaman Islands, there's still a way in which all of the human race is part of this collective mind. Like, for example, Aboriginal or indigenous people are dreamers. And even if they don't know anything about the news, they know everything about what's going on, I can assure you. Like they laugh when they see us using telephones or cell phones because they don't need that stuff. They can do this with their consciousness.
Oh, right.
So the advantage of this plug-in is that we're on the verge now, next year, according to Kalaman, of going into the ninth underworld of the Mayan calendar. This is called the universal underworld. And when we move into the universal underworld, this collective plug-in is going to become very, very powerful for our species. And we're going to start experiencing a true oneness and a true connection with all of us. We're moving very rapidly now out of that separation.
Yes, now it seems that there's a lot of meme engineering going on from that dimension, and that is part of what has been keeping us from connecting at those levels where we're, you know, because when we meet people in the streets, sometimes there's such synchronicity that it seems that we're just gravitating towards the right person and we're communicating at a telepathic level, even though what we're saying to each other might be seem like a mundane conversation. It's almost like we're actors on a stage and we're actually connecting at a higher level. But we're going to get, if Kalaman and you are correct in the timing, then we're headed towards a time when we will be conscious of this connection.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting the way you put that, Lance. You just said something I'd never really thought of before. I never really thought about what goes on, you know, when you run into somebody on the street and there's just that kind of connection. And I think probably that happens with people when they're really, really fully in the third dimension. And then they're really activated by the first and second dimension. And so their body is almost like kind of radiating a kind of intelligence that makes it possible to connect at that collective level. you know, well, it's the way you put that.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well, yeah. You know, it just seems so much more practical, and from what I can, what I've learned, you know, over the, you know, just from listening to people like you and paying attention, is that we're all moving into that space, and nobody is really left out unless they just are, it's just timing differences.
Yeah, yeah. And speaking, you know, another thing the Pleiadians said about that issue was back in 94, 95, they said that the nine dimensions of consciousness was going to be fully activated in our environment by the end of the Mayan calendar. And I used to think that was 2012, but of course now that I'm working with Colum on it, I think the end of the calendar is coming next year. And so what the Pleiadian said is the Pleiadian said, quote, that anybody who isn't activated at a nine-dimensional level won't be here. And that has had all kinds of ramifications for me. I mean, I have questioned the Pleiadians a million times about this one. And they say things like, well, it just means that as you experience now, there may be all kinds of people all around you who just aren't there. And I experience that all the time, where people just literally, even though they're here, they're not really here, you know, that routine.
Oh, but, yes, of course.
Yeah. But the Pleiadians also said that our ecosystem is going to regenerate in 2011, at the end of the Mayan calendar. Because, see, when nine dimensions of consciousness is fully activated on this planet, then what happens is the dimensions go back into their integrity. Like,
yes.
when that happens, then what happens is the sound creates the right geometry, and then it creates the right patterns in our dimension. And then the second dimension is able to transmute.
Mm-hmm.
Now, something really strange is going on right now. I'm sure that you're keeping track of the reports from the Gulf. And there are many, many signs that a very, very rapid level of transmutation is going on. Now, oil is a second-dimensional entity because, of course, they get it deep within the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you bring oil into the third dimension, it's toxic because it actually belongs in the second dimension. However, something is going on right now which is causing a rapid transmutation of the oil. And this may be an early sign of the dimensions starting to go back into their integrity.
Well, you know, it seems that that the original blueprint was probably designed to be harmonic, and at some point there was a distortion introduced, which you bring out in your book, Catastrophobia, that, you know, remained in our cellular and maybe even atomic memory,
right.
And that has really allowed others, let's just say, other selves of ourselves, other aspects of all that is, to use that moment to control us. So there's been a major distortion of all of these frequencies, and it seems as if what you're saying and what others are saying is that we're moving into a harmonic frequency in a higher octave, which would be the white hole, which
yeah.
we're presently headed towards from our universe of nine dimensions. Through the center of the black hole, which is the singularity where nothing exists, and then we're stretching out into infinity and moving into the white hole, which is the higher universe where most likely the Pleiadians and others already are waiting.
Yeah, yeah. you mastered that one pretty well. Did you know about that material very much before you got into this book?
I knew about parts of it from
yeah.
other experiences I've had, you know, experiencing this directly.
Yeah.
And I actually had an experience of going through a black hole where I was aware, and then I saw and felt energetically this wave coming towards me, and I thought, oh, no. And then as it hit me, every cell of my body stretched out, and my feet went out into infinity.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt like I was just stretched infinitely both ways, and then I turned into a kind of sheet of glass in the other dimensions, and then I lost consciousness. And so when I read that page about what it might be like, according to quantum physicists, to go into a black hole, that one's feet would go first and stretch out, I thought, oh my
yeah,
God.
Right, right. And as you know, a lot of that material comes from Ishtok Bentov, who was a really incredible scientific researcher back in the 70s. He was living in San Francisco when I was there. And I never met him, but I heard about him constantly. Just if people were going over and spending time with him and all that. He had a really beautiful, simple way of explaining extremely complicated cosmology.
Well, you know, it seems like it should be fairly simple, and we've just been so confused and pointing in so many different directions, and that's just the nature of the duality. But as we move into a harmonic reality that is not duality related, but polarized, and moving out of that into unity of all frequencies, that it seems that the vibration will shift. We'll be able to see vibrations with our third eye, I guess.
Okay, well, let's get a little bit more practical.
Okay,
because
good.
I think we've got a really good sense of where we're headed, but the question is, how's that going to affect everybody?
Yes.
And so back to that image of the person on the table and being in a multidimensional field. What happens for us when we start to open up these energetic portals that we have, and you've obviously had a lot of experience with this, is that emotional blocks that we have not yet solved, psychological complexes, judgments that we're holding, all of the different patterns that we're holding where we haven't really healed ourselves, what happens is those patterns start busting wide open. And so one of the things that's been happening for people, especially since 1999, is just tremendously difficult levels of deep emotional healing and physical healing. I know that everybody who's listening to us have had different sessions and different healing modalities in order to help themselves. And what I'd like to mention at this point is this process is going to get to be really intense starting in September. Because, first of all, we're starting to approach the end of the calendar and day 7 in the universal underworld, so that the acceleration factor this fall and winter is just going to be mind-boggling. But the other part of the situation is that Chiron and Neptune will be traveling less than 1 degree apart in the sky from September of 2010 through March of 2011. And
ooh.
People may not be familiar with Chiron. Chiron is a little body that astronomers argue about that orbits between Saturn and Uranus. And I wrote a book about Chiron around 25 years ago. And Chiron rules the process of getting into the deepest level of wounding. And the image that we use for Chiron is to think of an onion. Think of yourself as an onion. And when you start going into a healing and waking up process, what happens is you keep working through layers and getting closer and closer to the center of the onion. And then when you finally got into the very deep core center of yourself, then you have cleared the wounds and you are a healed person. And so because Chiron and Neptune are together in the sky, what's happening is we're having experiences of going inside and healing a block. And then the minute we go inside and heal the block, we explode open into illumination and into spiritual contact. And it's just because Neptune rules spirituality and Chiron rules wounding. But this fall and winter, and it's appropriate, when you think of the frequencies that we apparently are going to be experiencing according to Kalaman, the accelerated frequencies, then it makes sense that the planets would be working with us in this way. But I would like to say that this is just incredibly intense. And for people who know what I'm talking about, you've had a lot of these kinds of experiences, especially during the last 3 or 4 years, and especially this last year. But the real mind-boggling, most intense part of it starts with September. I know.
Yeah.
And that's only part of the astrology. The astrology that's going on right now is just some of the most amazing astrology that certainly I've ever seen.
Well,
like,
would you
right
like
now
to...
at this moment. It's
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, do you want to share a little bit about that? Because we're in a T-square, aren't we?
We're in the middle of what's called the cardinal crunch. I don't remember which astrologer came up with that name, but I really like it. And cardinal means cardinal signs. And the cardinal signs are Aries, Cancer, Libra, and Capricorn. And so when planets are in cardinal signs, that's when you're in first gear and you've just floored your car and you basically, you know, go 20 miles an hour in 5 seconds. That's what cardinal signs are like. They're full bore, let's get into the energy. And so right now we have Uranus and Jupiter in Aries, conjunct in Aries, and then they're opposing Saturn and Mars in Libra, and then they're T-squaring Pluto in Capricorn. And so what this means is that with Saturn opposite Uranus, and we had an exact Saturn opposite Uranus on July 26, whenever we have Saturn opposite Uranus, we have tremendous transformation and change in structural things on the planet. Then if you throw Jupiter in it, that magnifies the whole thing. Then if you throw Mars into it, it intensifies the energy. And all of that change and transformation is pushing on Pluto. And Pluto is, as you know, is the god of the underworld. And Pluto is the dude who gets in there and makes you change no matter what. And Pluto, Pluto operates on many levels. Pluto can be a very dark force, and Pluto can be a highly spiritualized transmutation force. One of the images for Scorpios, when we think of Scorpios, we think of the snake or the eagle or the phoenix. And the reason we use those three images is because plutonic forces operate in a very dark level or on a very high high ethereal level. And so then Capricorn rules structures and the basic formation of reality. And so we're in the middle of the deepest, most formative level of structural change that certainly has ever happened on our planet, for sure. And all of this is going to continue this fall. This is happening as we go into the end of the calendar. Really amazing astrology.
Well, it sure feels like something big is happening.
Yeah,
and then in addition to that, don't we move from the Mayan sixth night into the seventh day in November?
Yeah, we move into the seventh day November 2nd, November 3rd. And I'm really, really excited about that because we've been in the middle of night six for the last year. And
night six
of any one of the underworlds is always a very, very tough energy.
So
I don't know about you, but I'm happy. And another thing about night six, one of the things that we do with time acceleration theory is we can look back into the previous underworlds to see what was going on before now. And we can kind of predict what's going to be happening in the current moment. And so if we go back into some of the older underworlds, like if we go back into the national underworld, which is a 5,125-year cycle, that one goes from 3,115 BC up through 2011, and that's the cycle of civilization. And so if we go back into night six of the national underworld, we hit the Inquisition. And we hit the period when the European powers went over and conquered the indigenous people in North and South America. Very difficult period historically.
Yes.
Then we can even go back earlier than that into the 100,000 year underworld. The underworld before the national is called the regional, and it's basically the Paleolithic period. And when we go back into the previous underworld, guess what we hit resonating with us right now?
In my case
on my website, I keep track of all this. A lot of people tell me that they love that website because they don't have to keep track of all this stuff, because I've been sitting here reading history books and anthropology and archaeology in order to figure out what was going on before. And the very day the peak of the cataclysm in our solar system was 9500 BC. That's 11,500 years ago. And 9500 BC is, in terms of time acceleration of the calendar, it's this basic same resonation as April 20th, 2010. So when the oil spill happened, I like calling it the oil volcano, I knew how serious it was. And I don't know whether it's going to end up being as destructive as it might possibly be. But what I can say to you is that it was the perfect event to get people to resonate with the sense of catastrophe on our planet.
Mm.
It caused a mass awakening on the part of the people on our planet to the danger to the ecosystem and the danger of destroying our reality.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of how time acceleration works.
Wow. And then,
you
of course...
Yeah.
Go ahead.
We just got a couple of more months of this, and then when we get into November, then things are going to improve greatly.
Isn't that when you said that Chiron and Neptune are activated?
Yeah. In other words, we're individually going to be continuing to have these intense healing experiences. But
right.
But what we're looking at here in terms of the days and nights of the underworld, we're looking at the collective path of evolution. And so what, in order to understand what might be happening in November of this year, you have to understand what the whole galactic underworld is about.
So, yeah.
I don't know how much your listeners know about these various underworlds, but we went into the eighth time acceleration in 1999. And so we have been in the middle of an underworld since 1999. And to give you a sense of how intense it is, the first underworld in the Mayan calendar is 16.4 billion years long. The second underworld is 820 million years long. The next one's 41 million years. The next one is 2 million years. And then we get to the regional, which I mentioned earlier, the fifth underworld is 100,000 years. And then the sixth underworld is 5,000 years. The seventh underworld started in 1755. And it rules the development of industry. So what we can see, Lance, is we can see that we've developed history in the 5,000-year underworld, temple city cultures, civilization. Then we developed industry starting in 1755. And people actually can feel a different frequency from those two underworlds if they tune into their bodies. Mm. And then the next underworld, 1755, is industry. And so we have a frequency for that. But then the next one is 1999. And so when we look at the underworld that we're in the middle of right now, the galactic underworld, what this underworld has been all about is technology. And technology, of course, is the ultimate connector of all of us in fourth dimension by means of media and internet and all that sort of stuff. It's kind of an obvious thing. Mm. But I think what this means is that when we start day 7, November 2nd, I think that we're going to have a collective technological connection. I think that the fierce pace of all of the development of technology and all of the, you know, weird things that are going on right now, like look what WikiLeaks just did to the American military effort in Afghanistan, you know. In other words, it's speeding up, and what we're getting out of this technological awakening is we're getting truth, and we're getting a release from secrecy. The way the world management team has controlled us is by means of secrecy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's appalling. The level of I don't need to go there and get up on my little pulpit, but the technology has been suppressed for most likely hundreds, if not thousands, of years, and more specifically for the last 60 to 100.
Yep.
And so it seems that we've had the ability to do some amazing things technologically, but they've all been kept underground in black operations and, you know, who knows? You know,
yeah, I know.
Until the whistleblowers come out, and they seem to be starting to do that, we're just going to have to, you know, take care of our own side of the sidewalk and trust
the positive side of that is that people have been able to figure things out very quickly that they weren't able to figure out before. And so there's an explosion at this point of people on the planet who know what's going on. Like you and I can talk about things, today that we wouldn't have even been very comfortable talking about even 5 years ago.
Yes.
But there's just so many of us now. And
let's
face it, everybody's happy WikiLeaks did that. And the president of that company is a really courageous person, and he's obviously going to potentially have major problems from doing this. But, boy, you got to really admire somebody. He's dedicated to leaking secrets.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it has to happen. And, you know, whether the frequencies are amping up as it feels like they are, and all of these things are tying together, whether the leaks come out that way or another way, the truth has to come out. Even if it's just telepathically amongst ourselves, we can't move on out of the darkness until our secrets have been revealed.
Yeah, and don't underestimate what's going on telepathically, because another wonderful thing about this dimensional system is when you get into the sixth dimension, I got into some material by a physicist, Julian Barber, a book called The End of Time. And Julian Barber is the person who has given us the science for the sixth dimension in terms of physics. We also have cymatics and we have sound theory and stuff like that. But what Julian Barber has proven, and this is by means of hardcore mathematical calculations, he has proven that the sixth dimension is a geometrical region of consciousness and that it holds intelligence, and that the, and this is in, if you remember from reading it, this is called Plato. And the realm of Triangle Land. And, in that dimension, the really outrageous thing about Julian Barber, he just died last year when he was 90 years old. Unfortunately, he's gone. But first of all, he did a pure total physics thing of using mathematical calculations to prove his theory, which is the actual existence of this land of geometrical configurations. But once he got all the way through that, in the latter part of his book, he got into what was going on in that dimension in terms of consciousness. Mm. And what he says is whatever we're thinking about is being registered in that world of geometrical configurations. And when we're excited and enthusiastic about things, it actually raises the energy in that dimension, and then it changes things in our dimension. And he talks about the mist in Platonia. He talks
Remember
that? I know, because this stuff just penetrates slowly. In my case, I live with it all the time, so I'm used to it. But what he says, for example, he says that, okay, the mist in Platonia is rising, shall we say, for the exposure of sexual abuse by the Catholic Church, something like that. Or whatever an idea is. And then other ideas are dead and boring because people have lost interest. So what we're thinking about is a really, really big deal. This is something that people really underestimate, because ultimately thought does create reality.
Yeah.
And so, because just think of it, there isn't a single thing that you can see around yourself right now that didn't first come from an idea. That's just a fact. But we're coming to this point now where thought is being liberated, because the plan of the world management team and the global elite was to make sure we didn't wake up. They knew that the potential for us to wake up at this moment in time was there. Mm. And so one of the reasons there's been such heavy mind control and media manipulation is because they wanted to make sure we didn't wake up at this point. But we are. And I don't see any signs there's going to be anything that's going to stop it, like the cow's out of the barn.
I think so. Pandora's out of the box.
Yeah.
I was just kind of connecting the dots, literally, about this geometry, the Platonia, the mist, and the work of Alex Gray, and how people have gravitated towards ayahuasca experiences and mushrooms. And they all describe a geometric kind of formation and a geometric world, which maybe is also pulled in with the second dimension, which is the world of shadows and fairies and snakes and animal totems and things like that.
Yeah. The second dimension and the fourth dimension are really, really, well, all these dimensions are actually.
Yeah.
But especially for us, because, like, we're the Oreo cookie and we're stuck in between.
Oh, what a bore. Now, what about the fifth dimension, which is love and samdhi and Christ? Is that also Christ consciousness?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the fifth dimension is the opening of the heart. And so for most people have had this experience because they've had children or pets or whatever. Most people know about this one. It's in workshops, it's always fun because we don't have to say much. We just open our hearts and enjoy it. But, yeah, the fifth dimension is the dimension of unconditional love. And then think about this, Lance. We can go either direction with these dimensions if we want to go in a progressive way. So let's start in the ninth dimension and go down to get a sense of what happens in the fifth. So the ninth dimension is the Mayan calendar, which has now been revealed by Kalaman to be a system of evolutionary development that's culminating next year. So the idea here is that the evolutionary agenda creates it creates things that need to be created. And so the energy moves into the eighth dimension, which is the dimension of light and divine consciousness. And people can think of it as God, goddess, as they want to. But this system is very interesting because it has time at a higher dimension than the divine, which I think is just fascinating. So then the eighth dimensional divine consciousness, which functions as pure light, then transforms into sound, and that's actually scientifically verifiable. And then the sound creates the geometry, and at this point we're in the sixth dimension. And then finally the geometry goes into the human heart. And this is one of the most beautiful things about this teaching, because we can open our hearts and go the other way. And then what happens is the energy in our hearts expands and expands and expands into geometry and then into sacred sound. You can go either way. But this system is literally saying that these higher dimensions finally resolve in the human heart. And then finally, there we are in the third dimension with unconditional love. And one of the hard things about writing this material is you could make a case for just stopping at the fifth dimension, because that's all you need. You know, that's absolutely true. Any spiritual tradition will tell you if you just open the heart, nothing else matters.
Right.
But, you know, but being a Western intellectual, those upper dimensions are really
cool. Aren't they, though?
Yeah, I know. So Eastern, like I'm going to be teaching in India in October, and I think that's going to be an extremely interesting experience because they mainly focus on opening the heart. And so I'm going to have to really work with them to help them see how this information even empowers the strength of opening the heart, because I believe it does.
Oh, absolutely. There's no question about it. And then conversely, you can see how opening the heart is the key to the higher dimensions, because without the heart, you don't have access.
That's right.
And so, those who are hard-hearted with no conscience probably are not able to access the higher dimensions, at least not the positive aspects of them.
Yeah, I was going to say, unfortunately, we know from what I would call black magic and kind of people working with those kinds of levels, we know for sure that people can play around with these higher dimensions without their hearts open. In fact, you almost could say that that would probably be the best definition we could come up with regarding the elite and the world management team.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because they're playing around, they're using all these forces. Like, for example, how could somebody with an open heart use HAARP technology? That's H-A-A-R-P. And there's a lot of evidence here that HAARP triggered the Haiti earthquake. And I'm sure you've heard some of this information. There are a lot of credible scientists who detected the frequencies and stuff like that regarding
Whenever there's a major earthquake or anything devastating, I just assume now, whether it's 911 or, you know, a tornado or whatever, that it's something that has been created by the world management team.
Yeah, and I think that's true probably most of the time, but I wouldn't say all of the time.
You
know what I mean? But I think it is very, very frequently. And how could anybody with an open heart create an earthquake in Haiti? And it's, you know, because it's obvious, the suffering. But more than that, the Haitian people are really, really beautiful people.
Oh, yeah.
Incredibly patient, loving people. And if they have to bear this, it's just unbelievable. Yeah.
Well, you know, we didn't get to get into the whole goddess alchemy and the idea of the various ages and a lot of other stuff. So we're getting to the end of the show. And I wish I had another hour or two to talk with you. I mean, we could go on probably easily another hour without having to blink an eye.
Yeah, we can do a follow-up, you know.
Oh, wonderful. That would be terrific.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
I would love that.
In fact, I prefer that because sometimes 1 hour is perfect. You know, these discussions are pretty intense.
Yes.
So I much prefer 2 1-hour interviews than 2 hours.
I like it that way myself.
Yes.
And then you plant the seed and then you build on the foundation. And so I have several guests that recycle and this spiral and so on and so forth. So you're now on my spiral.
Yes. Go ahead.
Would you share with the listeners, my dear friends? Okay. All right. We have to close. Thank you. And your website?
HandCloud2012.com.
Wonderful. Barbara, I'm sorry that we have to rush, but I've just gotten the hook.
That's okay.
Thank you so much. You are just amazing. And you'll come back and we'll talk some more.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Oh, wonderful. Okay. Thank you, Barbara.
Okay. Bye.
Good night, everybody.